So the Kira advances ideas about Mountain Torah. So it's in Shavuos next week. We'll hear his ideas. The basic idea that the Tzoddik advances here is that the secret Sinai was not limited to that generation alone, but that every generation of Jews that accepts and observes the Torah relives Sinai in their hearts and minds. And that therefore the description in the Torah of what occurred at Har Sinai at the time of Mount Torah, that description has to be made relevant to us as well. So he says, if we may offer Mount Torah after the Aseret HaDibros, after the Ten Commandments are listed in the Torah, Nehemiah, the Torah said, the whole Roim is HaKolos as a Lapidim, that's Kola Shofar. That the people saw the sounds of the revelation, and they saw the torches, the lightning, that's called a shofar, the sound of the shofar, that's a horror shame, and the volcanic eruption of the mountain. Vayaron Vayanu, so the people saw Vayanu and they trembled, they moved away. So the Tzaddik's going to examine this pulsive in this inimitable fashion. Lahora Beis Tegos Vayaron Ubin Yusor. It says twice that they saw. It said before, that everybody saw. And then it says again, Vayaron, the people saw. Why does the Torah repeat twice the fact that the people saw? What does it mean that they saw? Ki kvar nemar kolon roi. V'gam ki loshon roi hu loshon hoved. And it's interesting, the first time it says, kolon roi, that verb is in the present tense. All the people see now. And then it says, V'cholom roim, which is the Lashon Hoved, and then it says, Vayar u Lashon Avar. And then at the end it says, that they saw, which is past tense. So in the same verse, you have the same verb once used in present tense and once used in past tense. What does that allude to? Omnam Yeshlomar, therefore I want to say, Shekolom Roim Umamis Loshen Hoved. The reason that it says in present tense, Kolom Roim, everybody sees. Loramej Al Koladoros. That comes to teach us that this revelation at Sinai was for all generations. So that everyone sees. Shekol nafshos Yisrael yesh b'kolchov b'chol zman liros b'nafshem asakolos. Every Jew has the capability and the potential at all times, in all generations, to relive Sinai within one's heart and soul by the understanding of the challenge that God presented to us. You shall be unto me king of the priests and a holy nation. That challenge that reverberates within our soul, that's the sound that we hear. And you see that in the Jewish world today, that even Jews that are far distant from observance and don't have that tradition of Torah for whatever reasons, but they have within themselves a certain drive to do good. Sometimes the drive is misdirect, but that doesn't change the fact that the drive exists, and that there is within. So that's why the Jews are disproportionate in everything that they do. The I saw a list of contributors to cultural organizations in the United States, beginning with PBS, the Public Television Authority, and Metropolitan Museum of Art, and a whole list. And that he would think that those were Jewish institutions. It's so disproportionate that it is, and it's because of that disproportion that the anti-Semites say that the Jews have all the money. It's not that the Jews have all the money, it's that the people who have all the money hope for them won't give away any of the money. And I've always remembered President Nixon's tax return, he had $400 million. So you make a $400,000 a year, you get $486. So that, don't tell them that there's a banquet every week here. So that's the drive. Even the drive to be do-gooders, also comes from a holy source. So Jews are Amnesty International, and Jews are for rights, and even when it's at their own expense, even when it's almost suicidal, there's a Jewish drive that it should be good. Don't kill people in the war. We're going to have a war without blood. That all stems from the fact that within the Jewish soul, there is this challenge that you were supposed to be holy people, the kingdom of priests. There's a special burden placed upon you. So in every generation, and every Jewish individual potentially has this drive, has this urge to help others, to be a good person, etc., etc. I read a number of books on the Jewish Mafia, the American Jewish Mafia. Which is hilarious books, except everybody got killed, but it's funny. But one of the hitmen, there were two strange hitmen, executioners. So one wouldn't work on Shabbos, so you know, he would be Shabbos, the other he wouldn't kill anybody. You have to call them up Sunday morning. I always think of that when I pass by, the taxis, Lower Shabbat, right? I'm thinking Shabbat, he's not going to do it, right? But that's one hitman. And the other hitman said to his employers, he said he only wants to kill the people who really deserve it. But if they really deserve it, then you can call them up. So, it's ludicrous, but on the other hand, that's also an expression, it's also something is annoying at these people. There, it's not just, a heartless killer without anything. So that, Ratzodik says, is why it says, Cholom Rovim Asakos. Rovim, the Lashon Oved, present tense. Every Jew always sees the sounds of Sinai. What are the sounds of Sinai? Not that deal in Amalekah's garden, they're going to those, that you're going to be a kingdom of priests, you're going to be a holy nation. You're going to be judged by a different moral standard. So we complain in the world that the world has double standards when it comes to us, as it does. Media, this week, they killed an American bomb, killed 42 people in Iraq. A wedding party, not a wedding party, but children were killed. That's it. That's another thing. I heard the American general yesterday. He said, listen, there's war. In war, people die. What do you want from us? Our soldiers did what they're supposed to do. people were shooting up, right? So they say they're shooting in the air because it's a wedding celebration, which, by the way, is one of the things that we have not yet adopted. we have something we're going forward to yet. They're shooting something in the helicopter shot back. How's he supposed to know, that's a minute, the remnant told them to shoot in the air. How's he supposed to know that? He only sees that they're shooting at him. So he shot and he killed them all. 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, that's from the wedding, not Monday, so But Israel, they one tank shell, and everybody out of Gaza. That's it. The end. End of the world. So it is a double standard. But we ourselves agree that there's a double standard. We apologized. The general didn't apologize yesterday. He didn't say that he did anything wrong. He said it's war, right? So that's what happens in war. In World War II, Truman never apologized for blowing up 100,000 Japanese in one shot. War, right? And that, and he, in the retrospect of history, he did it right, right? Because otherwise he would have been a million casualties. They had to invade Japan, fight through the island. They learned that lesson in Okinawa. The 20,000 Marines got killed. And General MacArthur said it would take a million American casualties to conquer Japan. So Truman dropped the bomb. But within us, we agreed to the double standard. We accept it. And that's because that's the echo of Sinai within us. God didn't deal with my letters. That wasn't said to anybody else. So to the rest of the world, it's war is war, right? And you're supposed to be a holy nation. You're supposed to be a kingdom of priests. So even though we're engaged in a terrible war, and it's brought upon us, and we don't want it, and and we're right, but nevertheless, we apologize for killing people. Because that's the echo of Sinai. That's what it's always says. And every generation, every Jew feels that. And that's the echo of Sinai that reverberates. That's why it says the Cholom Roim Asakolos. They see it now. Not that they saw it then. Everybody sees it now. We see God in front of us, so to speak. We're called to higher duty. We have to be special people. In Yiddish, there was a famous phrase, which is very hard to translate. The Yiddish used to say, it's pasnit. It's not proper. So, pasnit was never a declaration of halakha, right? I remember I used to, the Rosenthal, blessed memory, was the Rav here in Shari Chesed, the father of his current rabbi. He was really one of the, really a special Jew. So whenever you asked him a question, you asked him, Rebbe, is it kosher? He would never answer, it's not kosher. He would say, it's not for you. That was his answer. Not for you, which to me was always the greatest answer, right? But he would also say many times, people would ask him, they want to do this, they want to do that. He said, it's possible. It's not, it's nothing wrong, but it's not right. So there's a sensitivity, there's an area that's not covered in the book. That area is covered in your heart. So there are things that are, it's not proper. It's possible. It's not right. That also is an echo of Sinai, because at Sinai, God gave us not just laws, He gave us a value system, a lifestyle, how to look at the world. And in the value system, the lifestyle, there are a lot of things that are not proper, even though they're not forbidden. but they're still not property. And so therefore, when Sodic says that's why all of it is always written in the present tense, because it's good at all times. We're not recording that God said to our ancestors, you should be a special people. God said to me, that's what it means, all our souls were there on Sinai. He said to me, you're supposed to be a special person. You're supposed to be a special person. You know, so then you can't behave like the drugstore cowboy on the corner. Like the Israeli soccer fan that has lost his mind. It's not us. I had the pleasure of taking five of my grandchildren to a Major League Baseball game right after Pesach in New York. So it was on the coldest, rainiest night of the year. Got about 1,500 people were there. It's in Shea Stadium that holds 50,000, right? And my grandchildren had a wonderful time because they're, you know, they range in age from 8 to 15, and they're Major League, and everybody, I said to my oldest grandson, who was commiserating with me at least, freezing, so I said to him, these guys are getting paid $1 million a year to stand in the rain, but what am I doing here? But, so there were a bunch of people there, so it's interesting. Two groups. There were like 25 yeshiva guys that were there with Dana's on it. So they came over to me, they said, you know, we have $1 million for Myriv at the bottom of the seventh inning. Come, you know, in section 62, we're going to have $1 million for Myriv. Okay? And then there were like six, seven people that were in the next section by us who had had about 60 beers who were just, I mean, the worst dregs in the world, right? You know, a good thing that the stadium was so big, so we went down to the other place because the language and everything else that was going on there. I didn't want my grandchildren a beer. I said, you know, it's better. You can see better from the third base line than you can from the first base line. So, you know, so like I said, these guys are worried about getting $1 million for Myriv in the seventh inning because something is nudging them. So you go to a baseball game and you worry whether you get $1 million for Myriv. So that's also part of the idea that there's something within us that enables us. It's not just my grandfather stood at Sinai. I was also there. I know that I was there because I'm bothered by these things. I want to be a better person, even if I can't be. Even if I don't cross the bar, but I don't lower the bar because I can't cross it. Which is pretty much what other people do. Jewish people have never lowered the bar. We have always, we've never really made it over the bar either, but we've never lowered it. We've never said, okay, we're not going to be a kingdom of priests. We're not going to be a holy nation. We're going to be, that's what really the idea of the Novi Festival that people came and said to him, we're going to be just like everybody else. But just like everybody else means to lower the bar. Yeah, so that's the way it is. Alternate lifestyle. Do whatever you want. God told you, so tell them no. The bar is not lowered. You may not make it, so we'll have to deal with that. I'll give you a credit for trying. 25 years I taught, and I have to give marks. Which is a destructive thing in itself. You know, so I remember I had one young man who has since risen to greatness, but he had a terrible ninth grade. I can't describe it without terrible. And he was on the verge of getting thrown out every day. And I wouldn't throw him out, I kept him, you know, but he spent most of the ninth grade in my office. And the end, they have to give him marks. So the Gomorrah rather gave him an S. The English teacher gave him an F, but he had 7 Fs. So I said, I look over to your report card before I go out. I said, you can't do that to you. And when he can't, I said, he did what he failed. So I said, well, call him in and we'll talk to him. And so I said to him, you know, I showed him the report card and I said, you know, you got 7 Fs here. What are we going to do with you, right? I said, are you going to bring this home to your mother? You know, they'll. So he said to me, he said, Rebbe, he said, give me credit for trying. So I told him, I said, you don't understand, the F is after we gave you credit. But if you promise me that you'll really try next year, I'm not going to send out the report card. We'll put in all incompletes, no Fs. Put in all incompletes. You got 2 months over the summer, and you'll take all the exams again. And that will give you a mark in September. But you have to, this time you have to really try. And he did, and it turned around the whole thing. In 10th grade he got all B's, and in the 12th grade he got all A's, and in fact he's a doctor today. I won't tell you his name, but you never go to him. But, but that's what happens. So, but he said it so well. He said, don't you give me credit for trying? So, Rabbi Shalom gives credit for trying, too. So we don't cross the bar, but we did lower the bar. Lowering the bar is really the crime. That's the ultimate compromise. The ultimate compromise is, you know, okay. That's, you see that in sports, you know? He's taking steroids. So what if he's taking steroids, right? He still ran in 9 seconds, he ran 100 meters. Or, you know, a Barry Bonds did 72 home runs. So what if he's taking steroids? The answer is, you're taking steroids, you lowered the bar. So in sports, we understand that. You understand that in business too, people are accused of insider trading or things like that. So what's wrong with that, right? I mean, that's how J.P. Morgan made his money in a different era. Because you're lowering the bar, right? You're changing the standard. So when it comes to life, so we're ready to lower the bar. So we're not moral, so we're, you know, so we're promiscuous, so we're this, we're that, we're that, whatever. Everything goes, even if there's no standard. There's no bar to jump over. And there's only Shalom. The whole idea of Har Sinai over and over again is that there is a bar, that there are standards. And don't compromise the standards, you try and live up to them. And you have to try and live up to it as an individual, the Jewish people as a nation have to try and live up to it, and the state of Israel as a country also has to try and live up to it, with all of the difficulties that are involved. You can see now, see, it's not all politics, you know. People speak up for the poor, people speak up against economic policy and such. I'm not an expert in it. You certainly can't have a centralized economy and hope that it'll work. But on the other hand, you know, you hear the cry of the people that, you know, you cut them off just like that. So now what is he supposed to do? How is he supposed to solve that problem? But the problem is real. The problem bothers us. So the fact that it simply bothers us is also a sign of going kadosh, of a malefic color. And that's what Zodiac says, that's why it says rogue. They see it. Every generation sees it, every individual sees it, everyone sees the body. Everyone sees what God wants from us. And therefore, it says, Vayarom Vayonu, amazing word. By the new wings that they trembled, they moved away. It brought them to action. That's by your new. There are times that, you know, you advance an ideology, it's terrific, everybody applauds, wonderful lecture, you go home, it's not. So, the same thing, the Ten Commandments, wonderful, everybody signs up for that. It's great, but you got the new meaning. I go home and then all over again. I always, what happened to the 60 million people that Billy Graham converted, and people said, I believe in there, so where are they, right? When we need you to do something good, where are they? Because it's very hard to translate ideology into behavior. Wonderful, it's easy to make great speeches, right? I remember that a teacher that I once knew, so he taught in the yeshiva, so that year, that was in Breuer's yeshiva, so he taught that year Choshen Mishpat, which are laws dealing with money, how money should be, the laws the Shulchan Aruch regarding partnership and regarding all sorts of business and advertisement, etc. When the course was over, and everybody said it was a great course, so one of the students said, you know, that's wonderful, but what if we were a business? What do we do then? And that's an attitude. You know, we take the course, we'll do everything, but it doesn't mean that, you know, that you're going to translate it into behavior. So Ratzolik says, that's why it says the second time, Vayaron Vayonu, they move. Sinai is not just a theoretical exercise. They move. And it's in that movement that the Jewish people earn, so to speak, the idea of being a holy nation. Who came to see us tamama now? He offered the name of him, Moshe Al Tiro. Moshe said to the Jewish people, don't be afraid. What does it mean, don't be afraid? You see, the Torah is given with noise, with a volcano, with a sound of a shofar, so people are afraid. The revelation is a shock, it's a trauma. So, that's the simple explanation. Moshe told Pharaoh, you know, don't worry about, don't mind the noise. But Moshe said something deeper. He said, Al Tiro, don't be afraid of the challenge. Don't say, we can't do it, so therefore we won't do anything. Al Tiro, don't be afraid. And we find that throughout Tanakh, Al Tiro Abdi Yaakov, the Novi says, Yaakov shouldn't be afraid. So my Rebbe always used to say, what should he be afraid of? Because of us. He said, because of us you have to be afraid of. They'll come and kill you. He said, don't be afraid of being Yaakov. Al Tiro Abdi Yaakov, don't be afraid to be my servant, Yaakov. Don't say God is so far, that what relationship can I have with Him? Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of the challenge. Don't be afraid of what I will ask you. Because that really is the basic struggle here. Maman tie yiroso avneichem l'nufi tehetom, did Moshe say. That your fear of God, your understanding of the challenge, should appear on your faces. And look at a person and see that that person is a good person. The filthy tachato, so that you should not fall into sin. The Lord always says that sin is done because we abandon our logic, we abandon the mitzvahs bo'ulah shtus, the Gemara says. It's a silliness, it's a folly. It's basically giving up on yourself. I can't do it, so that's it, forget it.
young man that once came to me for a whole long, complicated story. He was involved with a non-Jewish girl. So when his parents brought him to me, when I was the rabbi, and usually when the parents bring the child to you, it's far too late to do anything. The end of the line or anything. But he was, so I asked him, you know, he said, well, she's the only one that will accept me as I am. He said, well, Jewish girls, and they don't accept me, you know, they're always trying to improve you. And she'll accept me the way I am. That's what he said, you know, to meet up with a novel approach. Well, I said to him, do you really want to marry somebody who will accept you the way you are? You don't ever want to be better. You don't ever be changed. I said, you know, now you're 20 years old, so you know, you want to be 20 years old the rest of your life. And it got him thinking. Eventually, for other reasons, I don't know if it had anything to do with me, you know, they broke up. Eventually, straightened out and etc. That's like one success out of 100 incidents. Most of the time, you're not successful. But that's the question, right? You want to be the way you are? Is that really what you want? You don't be any better than you are? And so, therefore, Moshe said that. This is the idea here. You will have fear of God on your face. You'll see that you're a good person, that you want to improve, that you won't sin, right? You want to be better than what you are. You want to pursue it further. And now he says a great idea. The Gemara says, what does it mean that you see a person on his face, that the person is good? What can you see on a person's face? Not everybody's as handsome as I am. How can you tell? So the Gemara says, Zua busha, shame. The person's embarrassed, you see it on his face. Face turns red, it's white, whatever you know, there's an expression. You can tell when a person is embarrassed. So the Gemara says, Mi she'im avoshes ponim, somebody that is never embarrassed, that is incapable of being embarrassed. Yodua shalom avoshem al har Sinai. His ancestors never stood at Sinai. What does the Talmud mean by that? What's the connection between whether a person has a sense of shame or whether his parents stood on Sinai? So Hassan Sofer says, we'll see what he says in a minute, but Hassan Sofer says here an interesting thing. Hassan Sofer says that God offered the Torah to the nations of the world as well. So the Medrash tells us that the nations of the world responded, "My seed say." Well, before we accept the Torah, what does the Torah say? So it says you're not supposed to be a robber, you're not supposed to be a murderer, you're not supposed to be promiscuous sexually. So they said, "No, you know, that's not for us. We don't want it." So Sam Sofer says, every non-Jew in the world didn't want it. There were people that didn't want it. But since the majority are hollering no, so everybody's hollering no, I'm embarrassed to say yes. He came to the Jewish people and he says, I want to give you the Torah. So the Jewish people said, no, it's an issue. Oh yeah, great. You know, we don't even know what it says. We take it. Every Jew wanted to take it, you know. Excuse me, you know, every guy in the back row that said, But everybody's hollering yes, so you're not going to get up and holler no. Go away. So there's something over the generations, God evens it out. Those non-Jewish souls that wanted the Torah eventually come into the Jewish people. And those Jews who didn't want the Torah eventually go out of the Jews.
And that's why it says that shame is the measure whether you were at Sinai or not. Because shame is what caused people to say no when they wanted to say yes. And shame is what caused people to say yes when they really wanted to say no. And God knows our inner, so we're not saying, but you really don't want it. Okay, you don't need it. I mentioned this week in the COLA class that the candidate for president of the United States, John Kerry, his grandfather and grandmother were Jews who converted to Catholicism in Bohemia in the early 1900s. His father, he's a colleague. His father is Fritz Cohen, and he had a lowly government job, so he wanted to have a better job. And the only way to get ahead in that time in the Austro-Hungarian Empire was the same time that Princess Mr. Mahler converted in order to become the conductor of the Vienna Philharmonic. Right. And so the only way you get ahead, that Paul Johnson has it in his book, he said that becoming a Christian in the 19th century was as essential to getting ahead in the world as knowing English is in the 20th century. And therefore it's understandable why a quarter of a million Jews in Central Europe in the 19th century converted to Christianity. Because of the fact that that was the way to get ahead. So Kerry comes here to America, and he has two sons, changes his name to Kerry, and he has two sons, and everything is hunky-dory, right? And then the grandson is running for president of the United States now. But he has a brother. Kerry has a brother. The brother meets a Jewish girl that comes from a kosher home. And the brother converts. He becomes a Jew. Cameron Kerry. So the threat, the man that's running for president of the United States, right? So God got even with it right away. So how do you sort that out, right? I read the article three times. It was a New York Times major piece on the national page. I'm sure that Kerry had a lot of nachas from the article. So how do you sort that out? What happens here? So some software at least opens a crack into the tunnel so we can look through it and see that, you know, there are different souls, and eventually you do what you're driven to do. But Consoli here says a different idea, also of great insight. Kimoshel Kolom Roim Yomer Shaladori Doros Nikla Panashas Yisrael Rios Akolos. I explained that in every generation, in every person, there's a reliving of the experience of Sinai within ourselves, even if we don't realize it. Even if we are. You know, we don't think of it in those terms, but that's what happens to Jews. Because what happened there, he says, here's such a tremendous idea. He said the Jewish people were ashamed after receiving the Torah, because they saw how high the bar was from what they were. And therefore they said, how can I not? So that's why it says that shame is connected to Har Sinai. Shame is connected because the revelation is, look what I expected you. Nobody ever talked to people in the world that way. You talk about pagan world of murder, a world of incest, a world where everything goes. You're coming out of Egypt, hundreds of years of Egyptian civilization, which was the great extent on one hand, just like the Greeks, and just like later civilizations, on one hand was very advanced, and challenging, and on the other hand was the dregs of the worst that could be. Slavery, sexual abuse, immorality, no value to human life. All of a sudden, it's only right, 49 days later, 50 days later. And you come, and here is all of a sudden the vision. You're not going to kill, you're not going to steal, you're not going to be immoral, you're going to honor your parents. You're not going to swear falsely. You're not even going to desire what someone else has. Ben Ezra asked the question. Rabban, they all asked the question. How could God have commanded that? I can understand God commanding that you shouldn't steal. It's okay, so keep your hands in your pocket. I can understand that God said you shouldn't be sexually immoral. Right? That's also controllable. I can understand that God said, don't kill. That's also control. But, you know, if I see your BMW, and I'm driving a 10-year-old Plymouth, so then what do you want from me? Then I shouldn't for a moment that will flash and say, you know, gee, I'd also like, you know, a 2004 BMW. I said, no. So how do you deal with that? So Ibn Ezra says the Torah, they all say answers, but many times in life, the question in Torah especially, you should know that, many times in Torah, the question remains even after all of the answers. And you have to live with questions. Yiddish, the famous phrase was, "When Akasha started, nobody ever died because he had a question." And the whole idea of faith presupposes that there's an element of doubt, because otherwise why do you need faith? What do you have to believe? So there always is an element of doubt. So the question remains even after all the answers. So the question is, God has raised the bar so high, and we're coming from, so then I'm ashamed. I'm basically ashamed. But that's why Herzog says that's the connection of shame to Har Sinai. The Jewish people all of a sudden saw a vision, a challenge that was unimaginable. And they see who they are. They're just 50 days out from being slaves. And God says to them, I'm then dealing, unless it's coming, but go ahead and vote on you. So they ran away. They moved. They were embarrassed. They said to Moshe, don't tell God to talk to us. You talk to us now. We don't want to hear from God anymore, because maybe Moshe will lower the bar for them. Maybe Moshe will make it easier for them. I was invited once to, only once, to give a lecture at the Yale University Law School. It was a Jewish event, but it wasn't the law school. I mean, if you ever went to the University Law School, it's just the buildings alone are enough to impress anybody. And the whole, so the great rabbi Wine, I was driving from my daughter's house in Lawrence, my son's house in Lawrence, I don't remember. And since I'm an Israeli, right, so I never have a jacket. And I drive all the way up to New Haven, and I get out to give the lecture, and I don't have a jacket. And we don't have a jacket at the University Law School, you know. With all the Supreme Court judges, the busts of all the Supreme Court justices staring down at you. So it just so happened that I found somebody that I knew in New Haven, and I borrowed a jacket from him, which didn't match my pants, but at least it was a jacket. But I was embarrassed. I had such a sense of shame. Because you know how you... Because there's a standard, again, an accepted standard, right? So what, in our country, that's not the standard, right? But in the Yale University Law School, that is the standard. So there's a sense of shame when you realize that, you know, that you're not there. And so Moses, so it says that's what happened here to the Jewish people in Sinai. all of a sudden they were embarrassed because they saw how far they were from where they were supposed to be. So therefore, by Yomur Moshe, Davera Toimonu, Moshe, you talk to him. We don't want to hear from God anymore. God, they don't want to talk to God. We can have a relationship with it. It's too much. By Yomur Moshe, Al Tiro, Moshe said, no, don't be afraid. Never be afraid of God in that sense. Don't be afraid of the standards. Don't withdraw. Don't say, I can't do it. Altiro, nothing to be afraid of. Shurak Lesibozu. This is the entire reason for Sinai. This is the entire reason for Revelation, is that we're going to create a people that have those standards, that will aspire to them, that won't compromise them, that won't say new religions come in the world and we all will adopt them. Bavur Tiriya Yeroso Alfnaitha, so that your awe of God will be visible to you. You always have that sense of shame that I'm not good enough. And therefore you'll try and be better. Sheyeh Nikva Araya Ariya Azul Dore Doros, and this will be implanted in the Jewish heart and soul in all generations. Jews will feel that. They will never compromise that. And so therefore, that's the idea in Sinai that we have of the fact that God's greatness is upon us. Now, I want to learn just one more little piece. We have another few minutes here. The great shofar, says by Har Sinai, Kol HaShofar Olech Mechozek Mo. The sound of the shofar continued and it got stronger and stronger. Moshe Yadaber, Moshe spoke, Elohim Yanenu B'Kol. And God answered him, so to speak, in the great voice and the thunder of Sinai. So it says they're in the middle of the next cow. Exactly in the middle. There's Kola Shofar, Merames Amidoso Shayako Avino Lashon. The sound of the shofar is represented in the personality of our father Yaakov. Shoyo Mitoso Shleim. Yaakov had 12 sons. Each of them was different. There were terrible things that happened between the sons. Difficulties. But the sons were a unit. They were united in somehow living up to the task of being the children of Yaakov Avinu. Levar HaGdusha Shekol Nefesh B'Yisrael. To try and bring out the best in every person. So sometimes best in every person, I heard this from my Rebbe, Shimon Halevi Achimre, Kway Cholos Mechayim Seyed. So it sounds like a curse. Not Shimon Halevi are brothers, they're warriors, they're fighters. Rebbe said that it was not only a curse, but it was an assessment. That's their field. That's what they're good at. And therefore we have to convert what they're good at into positive things and not into negative things. So Levi became the Meshores. Levi became the servants in the temple. Dedicated people, because anybody that's a warrior realizes the risk, realizes that every day one puts one's life on the line. And to be a lady, you have to feel that way too. You have to serve the Jewish people. Shimon became the teachers of Israel. The teachers also. Only a sense of dedication, only a sense of sacrifice makes someone a teacher. No one goes into it for the money. someone goes into is for the honor. Basically, it's a terrible job. You're caught between the, in our world especially, you're caught between the children and the parents and the administration and the principal and you know, everybody else that has great theories about how to educate people. So why? So that's that sense of dedication. That's the warrior spirit. So Yaakov said, Shimon Galevi, we're going to take that warrior spirit that exists within you, and we're going to channel it into positive things. Zvulun is a great businessman. He likes money. Wonderful. We'll make him a great supporter. Yisrael likes to study. Good. He'll be the Talmud Chacham. Yehuda has political talent. Good. He'll be the king. He'll be the ruler. And Yamin is the unifying force. Good. Will build the temple with his prophets. So he took each one of his 12 sons and his daughter Dina, and he built them into a great people that is very diverse. He didn't make everybody Yisachar. My Rebbe of Christberg always used to say that the Stifler Roth told me many times, he said, you can't take all the Jewish people and put them in the Kol. Now that's contrary to current popular belief. But that's true. So he didn't make everybody Yisachar, and he didn't make everybody Levi, he didn't make everybody Zvulun, right? Especially amongst my friends in the Syrian community from Aleppo, they were in New York. I used to deliver a lecture for them once a month at their businesses in Manhattan. So to them, if a child, so one of the children, one of their children, you know, became a rabbi, well, to them that was a disaster. Because if you don't go into business, if you're not a soldier, then you know, then you're not. So he came to the point that maybe I talked to his son, because his son was getting slippery and he wanted to be a rabbi. Maybe I talked to him differently, that you know, then you should go into the, I think the father would make a baby or something. So I told him that, you know, there are many blessings in God's vineyard, right? You got to accept it the way it is. But, again, you can't make everybody the same. And Yaakov realized that. So what did he do? He made them all holy. Not the same. So his woman's support story, that this one, is a student, and this one is in the service, and this one is running the government. Everybody is doing their thing, but they're all doing it as a holy people. And he says, "Lakabso me'arba kantos oris, the Rosh Hashanah will gather us from the four corners of the earth," which is really a miracle here in the state of Israel. Among all the miracles, the dominant miracle is that somehow there's a people here. So 80 different countries from there. What have I got to do with a Jew from Morocco, right? What's my connection to Rabbi Sabata? He doesn't even know anything about the Chicago Bells.
He knows
what's so what good is that, right? So then what's my connection? But I feel him as a brother. Lord will gather us from the four corners of the earth, in the bilti yidach, the menu nidach, and they will not be pushed away. Jews will find their way to be Jews. Because the great sound of the shofar, just as the sound of Sinai is within us, we hear the sound of the shofar. And it says, on that day of redemption, the great shofar will be blown again. The rabbis in their great metaphor say that the ram that Yitzchak and Abraham sacrificed on the Har Moriah instead of Yitzchak, the ram was sacrificed, they had two horns. So one horn became the shofar of Sinai, and the second horn is the shofar of Mashiach. So those are, we live between the two horns, between the two shofar, between the two sounds. So on that day, the great sound of the shofar, who opening Eretz Ashur, those who got lost in Eretz Ashur, and somebody says Eretz Ashur is from the word Ashrei. They're those that are lost in lands of affluence, of happiness, of leisure, of goodness. They got lost there. On the Dothim Eretz Mitzrayim, that's from the Lashon Tzora. And those Jews that got lost because of the Tzoras, because of the affliction, because of the persecution, the great shofar will bring them all back. And so that's the other peace of Sinai. The peace that we hear within us, both sounds of the shofar together, so which build the Jewish people.